Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with James Davidson, who I asked to shut the front door for this incredible portion of the show. He's in the studio, I'm in the studio, and just as a note to future guests, if you really want to get on my good side, bring me some coffee, because it's a really sweet thing. I am not doing any product placement right now. I am not earning a penny from this coffee that I'm drinking from Coffee Bean. Blah, blah, blah. Coffee Bean Tea and Leaf. Normally when I stammer, it's because I haven't had coffee, but I'm stammering right now because I'm currently drinking coffee, which is kind of a conflict of interest, but fuck it, we're live. So James Davidson is on this show. He is a true hyphen. He does a lot. He's an artist. He's a manager. And he's just a nice dude. So the next few weeks, we have some really great guests. Next week is actually a fanboy moment for me. We've got Matt Wallace on the show. Matt produced Maroon 5's Songs About Jane, which is one of the last records, I believe, to go diamond. So when you guys are all talking about your Heat Seeker record in New Hampshire, number 50 that week, 10 million records. 10 million. I don't know if anyone's going to go multi-platinum ever again, let alone diamond. So Matt has also worked with Faith No More, so it's going to be an epic show. Get it? The next week after that, we have Christian Wagner, who works at Good Fight Management, and he also works in the vinyl space, so I'm excited about that show. The following week, we have, scrolling down, Nick Holman, who manages State Champs and a whole bunch of other artists, and so it's like a good management month. And the following week, this is the first time we're talking about this one on the air, we've got Trenton, Mr. Trenton Warsham, who is a blogger and a very hard worker. So stick around every single week on Waldman's Words, where sometimes I'll drink coffee on the air, sometimes I'll choke on coffee on the air, and sometimes I'll just talk to myself. Technically, this is talking to myself, but you're listening, so joke's on you. Every single Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, where James and I are from, and bright and early Sunday mornings at 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern. And also, you can go on iTunes, download every single episode for free in the podcast app, or just go to the Adobe website and stream them all. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. I'm happy James is on the show. We're going to take a short break where I will inhale this coffee and throw the ice at James. Stick around. Hello, we are on Waldman's Words right now. I am on coffee. James is on coffee. James, thank you very much for allowing me to be the first person to interview from the suit angle.
It's going to be unique, that's for sure.
I mean, unique is a better word than interesting.
I don't find... So I've always said I'm like the perfect bell curve of average, so I'm definitely not interesting, but I'm definitely not boring.
Sounds like an oxymoron. Perfectly average.
Perfectly average, right? You know.
Yeah. Succinctly okay.
Sounds like a '90s record. Like,
let's do it. Perfect. Oh my god! By Better Than Ezra.
Right. Perfectly average. Better Than Ezra.
Come this song is called
Eh. Yeah. Meh.
So you're from the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that the location had, I guess, a major reasoning or major in your bloodstream for why you got into music?
I mean, the scene on the East Coast, like, you know, it was like fractured, but it was definitely not bad. And when I came out to LA, I don't know what I expected, but I was like, oh man, LA is gonna have a scene. And it doesn't, you know what I mean? There's a lot of talent out here, definitely. Like, that I would say that when you come out here, you better step your game up, because you'll go to a coffee shop and
the American Idol winner.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's refreshing, and it's awesome, and it's great if, you know, for people like us who are consumers as mm-hmm. well. But you don't get, like, you know, a basement show like you would in the dingy corners of the Northeast. And that's kind of where, you know, I came up playing music and going to see shows. And a lot of the people that I know, you know, and probably a lot of stuff you played is like, that's that scene.
It's more me here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot of me there too, because people have like the famine thought, like I like to say, where they're like, they think there's a limited amount of fans, mm-hmm. you know, and if everybody worked together, probably would be.
You mean community?
Yeah. Oh, have you ever heard of it?
Well, it was a show that got canceled.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Ever
and
since
I loved
then.
It.
But yeah, I think that Los Angeles in the mid to late 80s with hair metal And then when Guns N' Roses kind of changed that game, I feel that L.A. had that scene with the whiskey and
sure.
the Troubadour. And I mean, Elton John and James Taylor got their start at the Troubadour in the 70s, yeah. but and the Laurel Canyon scene. But, like, I don't know. I can't think of, like, a burgeoning L.A. scene. I would say that, like, the closest for me would be, like, the Orange County, like, Atreyu, Thrice, and Avenged Sevenfold in like, the early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say that there's some stuff happening, like, around some of, like, the bars and with some of the people that kind of work in the industry and are also still performing. But I guess, you know, when you come out here as a kid from the East Coast, you know, you have, like, stars in your eyes a little bit, right? So I definitely did when I came out here, and I was like, oh, it's going to be a certain way. And it's not that it's – I was, like, let down by it, but you definitely get an education in, like, reality when you come out here.
Well, you get – I mean, I would argue that the first year I was out in L.A. from – 03 to 04 because I'm 183 and I'm not talking about 2003, I'm talking about 1903. No, pre-World War One, Scott Waldman. No, I learned more in that year by doing than I did in my 22 years of education.
Oh yeah, and I mean that. You definitely get exposure to people out here that you want to get exposure to, and
exposure pays bills, right?
Exactly. Well, but I really do think if you work at it out here, you can make it happen. Whereas if you're kind of back east and, you know, working out of a small state or working, you know, out of a scene in the Northeast, you're gonna hit a ceiling. You know, there is a limitation on how much your hard work can really do without you having to tour your brains off and without you having to travel all the time.
Well, look, we could talk about industry in a bit, but the people out there, the movers and shakers, they're either here, they're in Manhattan, or they're in Nashville.
Yeah, you got to be one of the big three places. And like, and I guess as a manager, you could make it work somewhere else.
I could work in Dubai if I wanted to, but then it'd be a lot harder for me to go on meetings.
Oh, sure. And then on top of that, it's like one of my like primary things I do in LA, honestly, is like most of my clients, I have one client who's in Pasadena, but most of my clients are not in LA. So I get to be their voice and take the simple stuff or in around the city
liaison.
For them. Yeah.
Let's get into that in a bit. Yep. So cool. You grew up on the East Coast, I guess. What was the first artist or band that you really connected with? And they don't have to be from the East Coast.
No, so there was a thing in Connecticut, like as early as I can recall. I think the first show I saw was Taking Back Sunday, Saves the Day, Famous Blue Raincoat, and a couple other bands that were on that. Letter Kills. It was like,
I loved Letter Kills.
Dude, they had a couple. I think one was called like The Bridge or something.
Yeah,
like
The Bridge
that.
Is the record.
Oh, that was so good. And
Brand New Man is that song that I love, track four. That album is so under. I saw them on the Nintendo Fusion Tour, where it was them, My Chemical Romance, Lost Prophets, you know, the plotting to rape a one-year-old.
Right.
And Story of the Year. But what's crazy is that My Chemical Romance wasn't even direct support on that tour.
Dude, and now it's like everybody's just waiting for that one moment where the shoe drops and My Chem comes back. It's like, I don't think it's going to happen, though. I think, or either that, or they're going to wait until it's like a fever that can't, it's, you know what I mean? Cause,
a fever you can't sweat out.
Yeah, well, yeah, right? But they're the only one that hasn't come back in like the emo revival. Is
the only mega.
Yeah, they would, it would be scary how big they got.
Well, what's insane is that, like, people, by the time this airs, it won't be last week, but there was a My Chemical Romance Instagram that was created, and it got some fanfare, but it's not theirs.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
All they did was post a picture, and people
and
went,
people
freaked.
And they've done everything they can to be like, listen, guys, like, we're
shut
not
the fuck
doing
up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and people just are like, they're going to do it. But they're, I don't know, I don't think they are. I think,
well,
they're
one of those groups that, like, still sells well with kids. And, like, still, I mean, there's kids, young kids wearing their shirts at, like, they sell them at Hot Topic still.
Yeah.
So, power to them. Black Parade, one of the better records of the last decade, I think. But, anyway, this isn't the My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, how did we get here?
it was from Letter Kills.
Oh, right. So Radio 104, it was like a... the only good radio they were the only
favorite,
right? They were one of the only rock stations that came out of Connecticut, and they came and then they went and they came back, and they used to do this thing called five bands for $5, and the lineups they were literally $5 for a ticket. And
I
so,
assume that by the title,
right? But like,
I've been wrong before.
But like, you know how it is now. There's like service fees and all that kind of. Literally
five bands for $5 with a $20 Live Nation.
Right? Yeah, $25. So the ticket, five bands for $5, so the ticket comes out to $25.
That makes sense.
And so they had
do the math.
Right? Yeah. No, it's a $3 service fee, $5 internet fee, $1. Yeah, but you know, got to make money. I get it. But so they used to have literally the greatest lineups for $5. They had another one that was Yellow Card and Something Corporate were the two big ones, and then they used to kind of have three mid-size or smaller bands. Mm-hmm. And so one of the first shows I saw was Taking Back Sunday, Saves the Day, and then the support on that show, Famous Blue. Oh, Monin was the fifth band.
Oh, shit, Canada.
Dude, right? Throwing it back.
Canada.
And after I saw that, I just wanted to be Adam Lazara so bad. That was the end of it for me. My cousin in New Jersey had told me about this band called Taking Back Sunday because she had seen them at, you know, wherever the heck she had seen them. And then I saw that they were playing this five bands for $5 thing, so it made my mom drive me an hour to Hartford. And then I think, God bless her,
Hartford,
I love her.
Scares the fuck out of me.
Oh, dude.
Webster.
And, yeah, the Webster. Yeah, and it, trust me, it's not in the best neighborhood. Like,
No. I was actually, when the City Drive was playing there, I believe it was with Alistair, we were, you know, inquired about crack.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And you, it's like,
and you can't sell out. It was ironic because, well, irony is a word that is often misdiagnosed and defined, but... you can't sell alcohol on Sundays in the state of Connecticut, but yet there were a lot of crack solicitations.
They finally got rid of that law. It took literally like 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
They got rid of it.
But it took almost 300 years to get rid of that law.
There was many a time growing up where you know, someone in my family goofed and we didn't have booze for like a holiday, and it was just devastating.
You screwed up. Ugh. You have to drive across state lines.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Connecticut. It's a hop, skip, and a jump. You can just go to New York. It's no big deal.
Or Six Flags in Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, I get terribly motion sick on roll. We have such bad ADD. We're such a bad
company.
Yeah, I know. So I where was I? So
that's five for five.
There it is.
I'm able to focus when I need to.
Right, because
it's a good radio show.
You're the professional here, man. I'm going to go off the rails.
Oh, yeah, definitely professional.
That was like really what it was. And as a kid, my mom, my sister were always singing, and I was always singing with them in my, you know, prepubescent voice, I'm sure. And so I always was just kind of hooked on music and seeing Taking Back Sunday. And then I think they did another one with it was Fall Out Boy and a bunch of other ones, and Fall Out Boy became my, you know, Take This to Your Grave era. Fall Out Boy was my favorite band. It was my favorite thing in the world.
I mean, it's great songs.
Dude, it like when people are like, that changed my life, I used to have a stack of Take This to Your Grave CDs in my car. Because no matter who got in my car in high school, it could have been, you know, someone you would classify as like a jock or someone that, you know, I was friends. I tried to be friends with kind of everybody. And they'd always be like, who is this band? This is so good. And I'd be like, take the CD.
So you had a burnt CD.
Yeah, I'd be like, take the CD, man.
You know? They took it to their grave. So anyway, zing, right? Zing. Professional over here. Oh, wow. I thought for some reason we had a drummer in the room. But we have you. And you're a hyphen. But so I guess, was TBS or was it Fall Out Boy? Is that what got you into playing music?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean... I was like an emo kid, pop punk kid all through high. It's so strange
it's
now
very
to me
emotional
that it's pop
for me to hear.
Right? Like even going back and thinking about how emotional I was, it's you know, angsty. But
you wouldn't be the first to cry on air.
I know. Well, really? We'll talk about that later.
No comment. No, that's fine. We could shame people.
Oh, whoa,
that's well, it's not shame to be yourself. Keep going. Sorry.
No. I find it so strange because I was at emo night last night. So I find it so.
Oh, Under Oath, right?
Yeah, dude. Oh my God, Under Oath. Shout out Under Oath. You were. Effing amazing. I can curse. I forgot.
Yeah, you are fucking, or you are effing fuck amazing.
Dude, they were so good. And they were in there, they were like, oh, we'll totally play all night. We'll totally. And I thought that was going to be a surprise. And I was like, damn. But Under Oath is amazing. Shout out to the team.
How many songs did they play
together? They did four. I mean, usually when they have like a bigger act, they just do four songs.
So like one new and all three old?
Yep. Yeah. So they, I didn't know what the new one was yet because I haven't heard the record. Actually, it comes out on Friday. There's
yeah,
free,
it does by the time.
Free,
this, yeah.
Free promo there.
Yeah, seriously.
But then they played, I forget the names of the tracks. My Knuckles Have Turned to White, whatever mm-hmm. that one's called. Dangerous Business, Walking Out Your Front Door. Then they think they played Boy Brushed in Red, and then they played Writing on the Walls. So they was
the hits.
Dude, and they were so tight, and they sounded so big. It was pretty sweet.
They're a good live band, man.
Yeah. So I was like worried that I was going to miss this morning. I had such anxiety because I was up all night.
You hit me up mad early, so it's all good.
I'm an early riser. I'm a workaholic.
I would
sure
be
we'll
so
get
fucking
that,
pissed yeah. at you if you missed this.
Well, I knew.
This, like,
I knew
months ago.
I would be pissed myself. I know we booked this like last summer.
That's the worst. Oh. You're so last summer. But it's the worst when like you have something on your calendar and you get a call or text right before. So when I saw that you hit me up this morning, I'm like, oh, God, you freaking Momo. But no, it was actually the opposite of a Momo.
Oh,
you asked me if I wanted coffee.
If you listen to Scott's podcast religiously, you might know, as I noticed, that he's always saying, oh, I didn't have my coffee. I didn't have my coffee. So I was like, you know what? No, we're going to get the
Yo,
coffee.
Yo, I didn't get
Scott.
My Tesla.
Yeah.
Anyone listening?
Yeah, right? Can we? Hey, Tesla, shout out Elon Musk, boring below our city.
Dope.
Yeah, so I kind of like came up loving all that pop punk kind of stuff. I'm like a, not even a closet. If people that know me, it's like I'm a huge like Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. I grew up with my mom just singing these 90s female
divas.
Singers, divas. Yeah, I guess that's what you'd call them. And I sang in a church choir when I was a little kid.
I'm a Waldman, so I didn't.
Yeah, no.
Sing
if
in
you,
church.
I don't know if they have choirs on your side of the line there, but they. So I was
we
always
just cut our horns off every time we leave that house.
Oh, you guys. I guess I've honestly never. Actually, I think one time I went to a synagogue, but you guys, you know.
I went to a bar mitzvah for 2 years straight. Anyway,
oh, I definitely went to the bar mitzvahs, yeah. But my family was always a little bit late for everything, so before cell phones. So I just came up in that kind of wanted to be a pop punk kid, and that's what I was saying about emo night is it blows my mind now that, like, being emo is popular. Because in high school, everyone was like, oh, you love all this emo music, man. And they were listening to, like, DMX and Nas. And mm-hmm. I grew up in the whitest town of all time.
Well, Connecticut is that state.
I know. It was so whitewashed, but everybody there listened to rap. You know, and so I was like that one kid that was listening to this other thing. And that's why it's so amazing to me now that that this is, like, the revival of this thing that I was – it's truly nostalgia for
we
me.
We need
it's
a
crazy.
New band, though, to lead that revival. Like,
we really
I feel, do. I feel yeah. that it's a lot of 2007 –
but do you even think that people would accept, like, if someone
5 Seconds of Summer, I would say, is the biggest of the newer, like, pop punky bands at
yeah.
first. But I mean, right now, Panic and Fall Out Boy are bigger than they were.
Sure. Oh, that's what you if you were like one of those bands, you got to go away and come back. It's like that's like the move. Go away for like 3-4 years and then
write
come back.
Songs that could be on a Rihanna record.
And then you go pa-poom, you go up that next
wait,
level.
Wait, do that sound again?
Pa-poom.
Yeah.
You can use that. You can
that's the it. New band that's going to break out.
Pa-poom.
With their album Schnurf.
Schnurf. Like I that's what I would like. Do you think that like people would accept if like a band came out and was doing like old school pop punk kind of, do you think that people would listen to that?
I think that music is cyclical, right? So I remember when I first moved out here, when the Killers came out, I'm like, you know what? This makes sense because it's kind of like 80s inspired and there hasn't been like a mega 90s-ish band
right.
to blow up. So I think that could happen soon. But what's crazy is like Greta Van Fleet, they sound like Zeppelin.
Oh.
And they're huge right now.
Yeah,
so,
it's crazy.
So I think that a throwbacky band like that in the next few years possibly could. But yeah, I mean, guitars on the radio are rare now.
I know. And that's because it kind of, I guess, comes to like most of the artists I work with. It's so much music is done like in box, this pop sound. We call it like future pop. Since it's done with like samples and very little of it is done outside of, you know, programming or sampling kind of thing. And I do kind of like see right now when I look at touring that is the trend because you don't have to put, you know, a 5-man band out on the road with support, you know, with like a support crew or a couple, you know. And these acts that like at least I'm working with, most of them are 3 people or less and mm-hmm. it's mostly backline and they still put on a great show. So it's – I'm hard-pressed to believe that there will be a way for – like a big classic 5-person rock band to make it, you know, work their way up the way it used to happen. On
it's
like,
a lot harder now. Well, I mean, with the major label system, we're going into theory before we talk about you, but this is interesting. The major label system, if you have a single and it tanks, you're one and done. There's no artist development like there used to be.
Yeah, but they have so much. I get it. They have a lot on the line. The artist has a lot on the line. I just think there should be more of a parachute for some of those people, giving them more opportunity, whether it be allowing them to do
something. Springsteen took a minute.
Billy
Joel
yeah.
took a minute, and Queen took a minute, and you have to have a hit out the gates now.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's about writing that one song as opposed to putting out like a palette that is consumable and great. And I guess that kind of
with actually some metadata to prove that it's quote unquote great.
Sure. And now with like, okay, so this is kind of an interesting time to have this conversation, I feel like, because Spotify just went public, right?
That's true.
I don't know.
Is it because it's 10:57?
Is it 10?
Yeah, I don't know why that's an
interesting. Are we crushing time right now?
We're killing the game.
Dude, so Spotify just went public, and I think iTunes said that they're not going to have downloads anymore.
2019.
Okay, 2019. So, but even still, that to me
Best
is
Best Buy
like,
doesn't sell physical music, will stop actually
right?
this summer.
So in our lifetime, we saw basically cassette tapes come
what
and go.
What year were you born?
I was born in 87.
So yep. is my sister. So yeah, you were alive just as CDs were
yep.
becoming prominent.
I used to take my sisters.
Yes, well, I was born in 81, so I guess I was there from when records became cassettes.
Yep.
Like 8-track wasn't really a part of my life. Then to CDs. And then when I was in college is when, you know, MP3s and all that.
Yep.
And I remember when people had songs on their MySpace page.
Yeah.
And then now cars and computers don't even come with CD drives.
I know. And so we've seen like literally music go through in just in our lifetime, 30 years, we've seen it go through like 5 or 4 different stages of life. And that blows
same with
my mind.
Movies. I mean, when a VHS and Betamax in my life, I remember when it was VHS or Beta. Yep. And I remember when people were still, some of the people, the highfaluters were watching Laserdisc.
Yep.
And then I remember DVDs, like in college, it Blu-rays. Was kind of like, well, Blu-ray too. Well, that was like the more, that was the highfalutin DVD. But the thing about DVDs, it was like kind of like a status symbol, like to go into someone's like dorm room or their apartment in college and have them have like 400 DVDs.
Yep.
And now people are always like, please take my DVDs.
Yeah, it's a stack of garbage
streaming.
Now.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a coaster.
Well, my brother always used to say, he's like, our million-dollar business is going to be figuring out what to do with CDs and DVDs.
Bring them to Goodwill.
Yeah, throw them in the garbage. That's
that's quite
there's your business right there.
That's an incredible
you want to be a garbage
plan.
Man. Yeah, so I just find it like we are alive in like a very crazy time, you and I, as far as the transition of all this goes. And I bet you in our lifetime, we will see the end of movie theaters. I'm calling it.
I mean, I hope not because there's something about the experience. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
We're so once you can just have a VR headset where it's like you're in a movie theater anyway.
We're gonna have the end of people leaving the house.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Ready, well, kids watch Player One. Kids watch stuff.
Part.
I didn't see it.
I read the book.
Well, you're so highfalutin. That's the theme of this. I have a BA in English.
It's a teen. The book is written for teenagers.
All right, Cam Jensen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now. Kids are consuming on YouTube.
Oh, like crazy. Oh, and there's another interesting point because I come from that world as well. I worked at Warner Digital for a while. And
shout out to the lot where you took me and I saw Patsy's Pies.
Yeah,
at,
dude,
Shameless.
It's the lot. It's pretty sweet, man. I miss going down there. I used to go down there all the time and just walk around, hang out because you're in the center of a zeitgeist when you're down there. There's a whole
How
lot
many
happening.
ADD kids does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I know.
Want some pillow?
Dude, we people are going to listen to this podcast and be like, what is
ADDJ?
Yeah, right?
Anyway, speaking of which, we're going to wrap up this segment, listen to whatever Adobe chooses to play in between, and also we're actually going to go into your career for the second half. We'll have a prime focus on that, so stick around with James Davidson, Waldman's Words. Shout out again to James for bringing me a coffee, and I'm going to take a minor bathroom break. All right, we are back on Waldman's Words with James Davidson, and we're going to start this with a dad joke.
Sweet.
And then we're going to get serious, even though this joke is a pretty serious dad joke.
That's a dad joke in itself.
Thank you. Once in a while. Yeah, I might as well not tell it. No, what did one nut say to the other nut as he was chasing him?
I couldn't tell you.
I'm a cashew.
That is a good one. I love that.
All right. Back with you. So let's talk about career. So we were talking earlier about, you know, the scene in LA, but what brought you here specifically?
I mean, there was like a lot of factors that led up to me kind of coming out here. We hit a point. So I was playing in a band for a while. We were doing, this is why I'm like sometimes so blown away by the emo revival thing, but we were playing in a pretty down the middle pop punk band. I thought it was pretty good. And we had a lot going on for us. We were getting a lot of opportunities and all that kind of stuff, but we just weren't making the jump. So I was just like,
you're the singer.
Yep, I was a singer for that, and which it always surprises people when they meet me. But
well, what band?
We were called 2 o'clock Courage was the name of that band, or 2 o'clock Orange is every venue ever listed us in
well,
the history.
Well, currently
of that band.
It's 2 o'clock on the East Coast.
Yeah, well, there you go, irony right there.
Actually, irony, as I said earlier, is often misdiagnosed.
Right? Is that not irony?
No, irony is when something is actually doing the opposite of what it was intended to. So, like right now, if I start a fire with a fire extinguisher. That is irony.
Oh.
So every example in Alanis Morissette's song is not ironic. All right. Anyway. Yeah. Edumacation.
We have ADD. We definitely
what?
Do. We yeah. So I was doing that and I just needed a change of scenery and there's like a lot of stuff going on in my life at the time and I was just like, all right, I'm out. friend of mine was like, let's just move to LA. And I was like, great.
How old were you?
I was 26 or 27-ish.
Good age.
Yeah. And I just had enough of the snow. I've never been about the snow. I went to college in Miami. I always was trying to be somewhere warm. And when I came back, it was easy for me to tour out of Connecticut because it was inexpensive when we were doing the band. And so came out here, met a bunch of people, tried to do a bunch of different writing work and stuff like that. And
was 2 o'clock her done at that point?
No, we actually toured. We did a couple tours out of L.A. as that band. We just kind of reformed it out here. And we did good, but I don't know. You just hit a point in your life where you don't want to live in a van anymore, I guess, and that kind of happened for...
I'm nodding for those of you listening right now.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, doing a band with five people is hard, you know?
Doing a band with one person is hard. I mean, it's not glitz and glamour. So unless you're really, really popping, you're going to be pretty uncomfortable and broke.
Yeah. And we were making money on our stops. Like, not pulling it in by any means, but enough where we could pay for, like, the expenses. But it just still wasn't any, you know, it was fun as hell to do it with people you love and your friends and all that kind of stuff. But
you are at the right age, though, at least. It's hard to have a real sustainable relationship. Like, I'm married and I can't be away for like 8 to 10 months.
Again,
you can't do that. It's hard enough when I'm away from my wife for a week.
And that's totally part of it. But we were all at the point where we wanted to make some money more than what we were doing. And to this day, people still hit up the band accounts and offer and ask us to do. Are we doing this? And I'm like,
you're like My Chemical Romance.
I mean hardly. But like, it's just I'm past that right now. Like I don't think that's anything that'll ever be a thing again. But like now I have a professional life and I do that. And I still play around the city and keep myself sane and still write records and still write with people.
You have a minor paper trail with that.
Yeah. So the paper trail is my little acoustic thing I do. I was doing a residency at a place, a bar in Hollywood. I don't even know if it's going to be around anymore. I think it got sold. But so we stopped doing that there because it got handed over to somebody else. And so I still play around the city. I'm writing a rock record right now. We're going to try to put out probably over the summer, and then I run my little artist management thing.
Well, let's talk about that.
Let's do it. What do you want to know?
Genesis to now.
So that kind of started...
Because we have a similar story. I mean, I moved here, joined a band. We signed a deal, did that, quit that band. Not because I was getting old. It was because I didn't like lead singer. Anyway, so... but... did that and accidentally started an artist management company pretty much 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, mine is probably a little over a year old. Maybe actually, I think the .com just renewed like a month ago, so I think it's a year old.
And, Squarespace?
I have the Google domains. The website's being built right now. Shout out Jared Ramos building my website.
I don't even know how. I mean, this is important too. How did we meet?
I
don't even know. I thought I would know that too. I'm assuming it's because of the interweb, but I'm not sure.
I knew some of the people, like I had talked to some of the people at Rolling Artists before, so I think
Rolling Artists is me and Ross. So maybe.
I think it was one of you two.
That's fucking weird.
And then I think Ross might have said, "Hey, you should meet Scott." And I think that's what happened.
Well, shout out to Ross, my baby boy.
Ross. Yeah, dude. And so like a year ago, one of my clients, so Abby had said like, hey, I'm like, can you write songs for me?
Specific as to who Abby
right,
is.
So Abby Breslin, shout out Abby, coolest little girl ever. She's 22, she's not a little girl, but
she's a 23-year-old, she is.
Yeah, right, like she's all growing up. And so she is, she's an actress and she was trying to write songs and do songs. She had put out some stuff before, but she wanted to do something a little better and more professional. And she had come to me and a friend of mine and said like, hey, you know, do you want to write songs for me? Like, can you help me write some tracks? Because that's what we were trying to do at the time. And we put some stuff together. But then I heard what she was doing, and I was like, "Yo, you don't need a songwriter. You need a manager." Like,
it's as crazy as last time we talked. This is your conversation with me, so I'm having deja vu.
Yeah,
with you.
I mean, it's the same, you know, same song and dance every time I tell it. But so she was like, I was like, "You need a manager. Like, don't make this mistake. Don't do that." Because she was trying to do a bunch of things, and so. But, you know, one thing led to another, and we did that. And then, honestly, the next two clients I got were...
So she was your first.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She's pretty high profile, though.
Yeah, that's some people think so.
I do. I mean, what was her big movie with Steve Carell?
Little Miss Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, first of all, awesome.
That's
awesome
why
flick.
I said big.
Yeah.
Little.
Right? You love that. Yeah, she's dope, and she has an amazing taste in music. So the next two clients I signed were actually bands that she, or artists that she had turned me on to. So she was like, you got to listen to this guy. And I was like, yeah, you know, and she would just send me a track. And I finally, she made me a playlist, and I started just listening through this playlist on Spotify. And everyone was, she has just an amazing taste in music, like literally amazing. And so the next guy was a guy I signed. And when I saw, he played in a band called Number One Gun, which is a band I was a huge fan of, like, for most of my life. I hit him up and I talked to him, and he was looking, you know, looking for some help, and started working with him. His name is Jeff Schneeweiss, who goes by Lael. Then third band was this band called Hotel Apache, which, honest to God, like, I can't say enough about them. They're so talented.
Is your forum to talk about them. You could say whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, I'm in awe of their music. Like, I'm so jealous of everything they write. When you watch them work, and it's flawless, it's seamless. So they're doing a bunch of stuff. They're doing a track for Abby, and, you know, Steven's a producer, the guitar player in the band.
Are they based out of here?
They're based out of Fresno, okay. Fresno area. So mostly everybody's in California, and so they were the third band, and the fourth band is an awesome band called Loud Forest that I just signed like about a month ago. And Loud Forest is a little more established of a band. They're in Pasadena. They actually have a show on August 8th at the Hi-Hat, if anybody's listening.
By the time this airs, it'll be after August
8th. Well, then they have one on the 13th. Just go to their Instagram, and you can check out where the
August
show.
August 8th is actually a NoFX song.
Really?
If you Google it, because it's about when this is really messed up, but when Jerry Garcia died, and the song's August 8th is a beautiful day. Yeah.
Well, you know, NoFX.
Those bastards.
Yeah, right?
I guess where I really did meet you for the first time was at Warner. What were you doing there concurrently while you were managing?
So I was working at a company that was bought by Warner, and that was pretty early on in the process when I was with them. And then we would do basically digital management for like, they call them influencers. So gaming personalities, actors, actresses, comedians, you know, people that have YouTube accounts. A lot of the ways that we would interface with those clients were through signing their YouTube channel, because almost everybody has a YouTube channel.
Right.
You know, pretty much everybody. And then on top of that,
we can make one right now.
I mean, you should absolutely have a YouTube channel for this, but we'll talk about that after. You
know?
I do have this background in, you know, the digital space, which is good because you know, music can be fickle at times.
Really?
Everybody listening to this knows that. But so I was doing that, and that was awesome because it exposed me to obviously a lot of different sections of the industry. And I had worked at a small label for like 3 or 4 months called iHeart Comics out of downtown LA.
It's okay. This is getting you really emotional.
No, it's the agita from all this coffee and LaCroix.
Shout out.
And then I had worked for this awesome guy named Max Forzan, and he was doing like consulting on entertainment properties. And so I had done a few different things, and then I got over to doing the thing at Warner Digital. And it was a great experience. And then I just decided, you know, I'm going to do me. So now I just have Wild Union,
So you work with yourself.
Yeah, dude, Wild Union Artist Management.
Where'd that name come from? That's a great name.
I come from as a writer and, you know, musician first and foremost. I have like a list of just what I consider awesome band names, and it was just on there. I wish it was a more entertaining story than that. And I wanted like the brand to be kind of built around nature, because I like to go, you know, out into the world and hike and all that kind of stuff. And
you need to get out of LA for that.
Oh, God, man. Yosemite National Park, best place in the whole world.
I've never been.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you must go. I'm going at the end of the month.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's like going to another world, because it shouldn't exist. You go up into the mountains, and then you dip down in this valley, and it's just... It's perfect. It's the background.
Have you ever been to Big Sur? Have you ever done The One?
No, I'm sure.
That's another world too, man. Your phone doesn't even work for a few hours.
I'm trying to, but there was like the landslide that took out one end, and then a bridge went out on the other end, so you couldn't get in there for so long. Yeah. Well, you know, a landslide brought it down.
Oh,
you couldn't
I've heard that song.
You couldn't get in there.
That's a Dixie Chick song, right?
Isn't it a Dixie Chick song? Right? People on the other end of the line here are like, no!
Yep.
Screaming at us. Yeah, so I'm actually going to go and try to do Big Sur at the end of the month, too, when I do Yosemite.
I highly recommend driving up the one, especially since you're in a relationship.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to be able to go up there. But last time I went up there, the last few times, it was closed. So.
Those bastards.
Yeah, it was painful.
Well, we have a little bit of time left, so... What advice would you give to someone like you, a young, spry, mid-20s person who wants to move to a big city and become an artist manager?
Do it. I mean, so when I kind of started, actually, this is probably the best forum for it. So when I started doing this company, when I kind of like made a bunch of changes in my life, I put together my four rules. I got the four rules. I tell everybody.
Oh, this is rad.
The four rules all the time. So let me see if I can remember them. They're written on a whiteboard in my room. And I got drunk one night and added.
Is it like don't talk about Fight Club?
No. Yeah. The second rule is don't talk about the four rules. Actually, half of the rules are don't talk about the rules. But so I actually, it's funny. I got drunk apparently at some point over the last few months and added a fifth rule, and I leave it up there.
Fifth rule to the four rules?
Yeah, because I can't tell what the fuck it says. it's like crazy, but it's so work with people that work as hard as you do. Spend time with people who want to spend time with you. No one is an expert. So even when someone says they're an expert, they're usually not an expert.
Well, just, yeah, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, totally. So no one is an expert. And then the fourth one is take more risks, because you're usually going to you should bet on yourself. So take more risks.
Those are good rules.
Yeah. And honestly, it's worked out great for me. And so anytime anybody's like, oh, you know, I don't know what's going on with my life. I don't know what's happening. I'm like, live by the four rules. The four rules will never lead you astray, because if you surround yourself with people that are working as hard as you and want to be around you you know, are taking risks to better their life. And,
which is music in general.
Yeah. And they're humble people that don't, you know, sit down and say, I know this, I know that.
Or
know?
Don't talk on Facebook about how hard they're working.
Yeah. That's the thing is, it's like I feel like with my company, I want to tell people like so that people are excited about what we're doing as a group. But I feel so strange.
There's
like,
a difference between promoting your product and promoting yourself as a boss ass bitch.
Yeah.
That I just get really turned off by that.
I'm the most boring person to follow on social media, because I'm not, I don't know what to post.
I'd rather.
That's why I love your
account. Oh, thank you.
Because you just, with the jokes you put, by the way, you should absolutely encourage Scott to start an Instagram account of all the stuff he posts on Facebook, because it is gold.
I post silly jokes just because I want to bang my head into a wall with a lot of stuff. And obviously I talk about, you know, certain successes I have in music, but I've been spending a bunch of time on my show, and I support it. I just see so much stupid shit.
Oh, God. And it's tough, though, because, like, when we're not supposed to be able to talk to, like, this many people at one time. This is unnatural. Like, even a podcast where you can reach however many people.
It's so strange. It used to be Walter Cronkite.
Yeah.
He used to be the people who write for the Times.
Thank you.
Yeah. Waldman's Words is changing its name soon. But basically, someone posted something really funny about, you know, that when you book a flight, you don't need to post about it.
Right. Yeah. Or when you go to the airport and you check in. That's the one where I'm like, unless you need a ride from the airport, I don't get it.
What about the people, because you're connected with a lot of managers who post pictures when they're at Capitol Records, and they post a picture like at the Capitol, and it's like, great. But first of all, like, if people at Capitol see that, they're not going to be stoked on it. And second of all, you're not signing to Capitol.
Right. You're just so like with me, I almost don't want people to know what I'm doing.
You shouldn't.
I want to be I like my privacy in my life, generally speaking.
Your privacy.
I tell everybody if I didn't work in music or have something to promote, which obviously I do with my music and my Wild Union. I really do love that name, by the way, not to toot my own horn, but
no, it's a good name. I like it.
Yeah. No. But if I didn't have something going on, like professionally or in music, I honestly wouldn't have social media. Like, I would probably have an Instagram to post cool pictures of cool stuff I see, which is, if you go to my Instagram, is not much. I don't see a lot of cool stuff. But, like, if I go on a vacation, you're gonna see some dope stuff from my vacation. And it's like, I'll go 6 weeks without posting a picture, and then if I do something cool, I'll be like, oh, look, it's Yosemite, you know, because that's what you're going to see at the end of the
month. Yosemite is cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Social media is like obviously a great tool, but you know, as an artist manager, like Facebook for bands now is like banging your head against a wall. And when
my head hurts.
When we were when we were starting out as a band, MySpace was still all the rage, and we would single-handedly,
you know, in my eyes, it still is.
They tried to bring it back, failed miserably. But we used to get like a whole string of shows booked, a whole tour booked off of just people hitting us up, being like, "Will you come to our? Will you come play here? Will you come do this?" And now for whatever
Facebook,
reason.
Facebook, it's a lot more difficult.
It's so gated. It's like gated. You have to pay for exposure.
Well, originally you didn't, but right now, I mean, you don't have songs on your profile page. People aren't linking up and adding like they did in 2005 when MySpace ruled the world. It was on the back of major label albums, the MySpace address for a band. Yeah. It's so stupid.
In like 200 years, people are going to be like, what is that? When they find these in landfills because they still haven't. So it's so unfortunate because Facebook.
With your CD and DVD business.
Right. Yeah. You know, which is a garbage company. But so they like Facebook could have cornered the market on that so well. And they just they made it more difficult for some reason.
Well, they're on people. Making money that way.
Oh, I know. And they're selling by selling our information. But so.
We signed the terms of service.
Apparently we did. Dude, the South Park episode. Have you seen that one?
I love that show. Continue, because this is going to be where we wrap up.
No, so, I don't know. So, it's unfortunate because everything seems to be working against musicians these days. You know, and we're at this kind of point where, like, music could be, like, a great part of our culture and could solve a lot of problems and bring a lot of people together. But like, so much of industry and all these kind of things are almost working against it. Technology is working against it. You have to pay to get exposure. You have to pay to get on a blog, you know. And I think that's such a bummer because I really do think now we kind of come full circle that it kind of chokes out these local scenes because the only way that people find out about stuff is through social media and none of the exposure is getting – you're not getting any of this exposure from your Facebook page anymore. I remember when I first started a Facebook page for like one of my bands, within the first like – 6 days, we had 2,000 likes because just
I'm taking a picture of you while talking about this passion because you actually are fired up and I like it.
I get fired up about certain things, but we were able to get like 2,000 likes because it went to everybody that I was friends with on Facebook. And now if I want someone to like something, it's like I have to ram it down their throat basically. You know,
they're always works.
Never. And I'm one of those people where I'm like, dude, stop inviting me to like your page. Like I just don't – it's not that I don't like what you're doing. I just don't want it on my newsfeed. I want to see like my cousin's wrestling matches and stuff.
Or
like, that's what
pictures.
I'm interested in. Yeah. And so it's like I don't want to be one of those people that thinks they're so special that makes the second Facebook account for just like their family and friends. But I'm almost about to because like I see stuff where it's like ads and people complaining about God knows what. And then I like I scroll halfway down. I'm like, oh, I wanted to see that my cousin won, you know, his jujitsu tournament. Like,
but
not,
it gets lost in the shit show.
It gets lost in the shit show. It's like, how does Facebook not know I care more about that? But
algorithms, dog.
So I guess it's my fault, right?
100%. They actually know your political affiliations too. Anyway, we're both Team Trump here, so it's very important.
Yeah, as people know, we want to make America.
It already is great.
Yeah, right? It was before. That's what he didn't know.
Yep. Well, I guess if – wow, my voice cracked. You got me really pubified. So with the last remaining little bit, I guess give people – speaking of socials, how they can get a hold of you, how they can check out your management company and anything you want.
Yeah, so my management company is called Wild Union Artist Management. Our website should be live soon. We're getting that worked on. I kind of put that on the bottom of my priority list. I was working on a bunch of other stuff for everybody else. Going to be announcing some shows for the guys on the roster. So that's Lael, Hotel Apache, Abby Breslin, who goes by Sophomore, and Loud Forest. And so that's the management group. Then I am at James is the Paper Trail on Instagram. Just find me there. I don't really use the other ones too much. I'm the Paper Trail for my acoustic stuff. And I got a new rock project probably coming out this summer. And when I do, I'll chat with you about it. We'll have a good time.
Fuck yeah.
Dude, it's going to be dope.
So this episode was dope. Fist bump across the room every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And on the weekends, Sunday, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Go on iTunes. Download every frickin' episode. Go on Adobe.com. Stream every frickin' episode. And thanks to the Bearded Army and James.
Scott, you are a pleasure to talk to. And the music industry and myself personally appreciate you, man.
Oh, wow.
I love you, buddy.
I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, you should be, man.
I'm turning into a freaking peach right now. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.